It's Morning Edition from NPR News. Good morning. I'm Steve Inskeep. Later today, the Federal Reserve will take some extraordinary action. It is not a $100 billion rescue of a Wall Street firm. At this point, that would count as almost normal. What the Fed will do is take a step to better explain itself. Ben Bernanke will become the first Fed chairman in history to hold a full-fledged press conference. The plan is to talk with reporters once every 3 months. NPR's John Itzee reports.
It may come as a surprise, but for some people, there's a bigger media event this week than the royal wedding.
Definitely, which shows what a strange world I live in, the first news conference by a Fed chairman.
Do you know what day the royal wedding is?
I do, Friday.
Alan Blinder has an excuse. He's a former vice chairman of the Federal Reserve who has pushed for more openness at the central bank. He thinks press conferences are a good idea.
I think the Fed basically has a good story to tell and very little to hide, but it's given the impression to a lot of people that it has a lot to hide, so I think it can do some good in that domain. On the other hand, is it going to get Ron Paul to stop worrying and love the Fed? I doubt it.
Texas Congressman Ron Paul has called for abolishing the Federal Reserve. Vincent Reinhardt, a former Fed official, says the central bank's decision to hold press conferences is partially a response to criticism spawned by the financial crisis when the government rescued Wall Street firms that it said were too big to fail.
But when they say too big to fail, a lot of people hear, I'm just too little to be helped. And so the Fed is seen as an instrument of tilting the playing field in favor of the big guy.
While explaining its response to the recent crisis might be part of the impetus behind the press conferences, Reinhardt says the Fed has actually been on a nearly 20-year journey towards more openness. Remember, there was a time when Fed chairmen like Alan Greenspan were intentionally opaque.
Should these trends towards supply and demand balance persist, the ongoing need for ever-rising imports and for a further draining of our limited labor resources should ease or perhaps...
Well, you get the idea. In fact, the Fed's approach to communicating a couple of decades ago was labeled constructive ambiguity. It was thought that policy changes could be most effective if the markets were surprised by the Fed's moves. But that changed midway through Alan Greenspan's tenure, says Alan Blinder.
And Alan Greenspan was no longer making these famous or infamous statements, which he had made before, like saying, well, if you understood what I meant, I must have misspoken.
The idea now is that the Fed can do better by making its intentions clearer to the markets. Blinder says press conferences certainly won't solve all the Fed's communication problems, and there are some risks.
A central banker will occasionally make a slip and not put something artfully and be misinterpreted, and so on.
But central bankers in the United Kingdom, the European Union, Japan, and Canada all hold regular press conferences, and Blinder says research indicates they have a positive impact. Vincent Reinhardt says the news conferences will likely give Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke more power to frame what happened at the Fed meetings, which will precede each of the press events.
He gets to speak the week before anybody else gets to speak. Because for the rest of the week, there's a blackout in which Fed Reserve officials are not supposed to talk to the public.
That's likely to weaken the arguments of dissenters. Reinhardt says this new mode of communication for the Fed could be particularly valuable in the coming months as the central bank ends its huge economic stimulus known as quantitative easing and begins the unpopular job of raising interest rates. John Itzee, NPR News, Washington.
Members of Congress are also busy explaining themselves this week. Most are back in their districts for Easter break, and many are holding town hall meetings. For House Republicans, it is the first time since some key votes, including one approving a budget that outlines significant changes to Medicare. Yesterday, Florida Republican Daniel Webster held a town hall meeting where the crowd included NPR's Greg Allen.
Dan Webster is a freshman congressman, but no political neophyte. He served 28 years in Florida's legislature before unseating Democrat Alan Grayson in last fall's election. Here in his home district, he has lots of friends.
I'm so proud of what you're doing. I'm so glad we got you in that race.
Gene Hawkins, husband of Florida's late Senator Paula Hawkins, was one of those attending Webster's town meeting in Orlando. Webster has been in Congress now for just 3 months, but as a member of a large and influential Republican freshman class, he says he feels he's making a difference.
We're showing that we're going to get this jobs economy and the economy going by just cutting spending. And we believe we can get the budget under control and our debt under control by cutting spending. And that's the focus, and I think it's going to work out good.
Webster says he was happy to support the recent spending plan that cuts $38 billion from this year's budget. Many other freshman Republicans voted against it. But the vote he was repeatedly called on to defend yesterday was the one in support of the plan put together by House Budget Chief Paul Ryan. Its most controversial provision, a dramatic overhaul of Medicare that cuts spending and benefits. In an interview, he said it's a tough budget decision, but one that can't be avoided.
We cannot keep going. Medicare is going to be broken by the year 2020, which is just 9 years away, and at least Part A, and we've got to do something about it.
In front of a standing room only audience of some 300 people, Webster puts up charts to talk about the deficit and efforts to bring it under control.
And so there's a problem within the entitlement programs, which are the mandatory spending. The Ryan budget, which you may have heard, quote, is just named after the budget chair, Congressman Ryan, put forth.
The audience erupts in a mixture of boos and cheers. It's a far different crowd than at town meetings Webster held earlier in the year, where the Tea Party had a visible and vocal presence. There were some Tea Party supporters at Webster's town meeting, but they were outnumbered by others who came to show their displeasure with the congressman's support for the Ryan budget plan. Maria Reynolds asked him how he could support a plan that cuts Medicare while at the same time lowering taxes for business.
And what that does is you're going to give them that tax break to take away Medicare from me. I'm at that age where I wouldn't get it. How do you think and I have pre-existing problems. What insurance company is going to insure me? You tell me.
Congressman Webster told her without the overhaul, Medicare may be insolvent and unable to provide her with any coverage when she turned 65. Many in the audience weren't happy with that response or with the large spending cuts Webster says are unavoidable. Several times he was asked why, along with spending cuts, won't Congress consider raising taxes?
In an economy that we have today, I'm not really in favor of raising taxes because, to me, we need to get people back to work, and the more we start taxing people, the less opportunity there will be. Yeah.
There were several disruptions during yesterday's town meeting. At one point, an Orlando City policeman providing security asked the crowd to calm down and keep the discussion civil. Outside, Sue Kosterlein was holding a sign protesting Webster's support for the Ryan budget.
When people realize what they're up to, and a lot of people still don't realize it, when they realize what they're up to, there will be the sleeping giant is awakening.
This is a congressional district almost evenly split between Republicans and Democrats. One where Webster next year is all but guaranteed a tough re-election bid. He's one of 25 House Republicans already targeted by the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee. It began last week running an ad in his district that accuses him of voting to end Medicare. Greg Allen, NPR News, Orlando.
Congressman Webster is not the only lawmaker facing questions about Medicare. The man who authored the Republican budget plan is Congressman Paul Ryan of Wisconsin. Ryan received praise from many pundits, but has been getting a more mixed response back home. Many people at his town hall meetings in recent days were supportive, while others booed loudly as Ryan advocated lower taxes for the wealthy.
From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Alyssa Blanc.
And I'm Michelle Norris. It was a historic day at the Federal Reserve. Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke walked into a conference room at the central bank to hold the first of what will be regular press conferences.
Good afternoon.
Welcome.
In my opening remarks, I'd like to briefly first review today's policy decision.
With that, Bernanke began a statement which was followed by a Q&A. And while Bernanke may not have made a lot of news, the fact that a Fed chairman was taking questions from reporters right after a Fed meeting was news in itself. And NPR's John Itzty was at the Fed today, and he joins us now in the studio to talk about it. Hey, John.
Hi, Michelle.
The Fed has been a very tight-lipped institution until relatively recently. Did Bernanke give any reason for deciding it was time to now begin holding these regular press conferences?
He did, and he started by talking about the old days of central banking secrecy.
It used to be that the mystique of central banking was all about not letting anybody know what you were doing.
Actually, Michelle, central bankers thought their policies worked best if they kept the market guessing. They actually called it constructive ambiguity. In fact, you may remember that Alan Greenspan reportedly once said, "If you understood what I said, I must have misspoke." Now, Greenspan did start moves toward more openness during his tenure, and Bernanke said he's always supported better communication by central banks.
I personally have always been a big believer in providing as much information as you can to help the public understand what you're doing, to help the markets understand what you're doing, and to be accountable to the public for what you're doing.
John, as we said earlier, Ben Bernanke did not make a lot of news beyond the event itself, and that's probably what the Fed had hoped for.
That's right. I don't think the chairman sees these events as opportunities to make news, but rather, as he said, a forum for explaining the Fed's actions. And that's what he did today. In his opening remarks, he reviewed and elaborated on the statement from the Open Market Committee that it issued just before the news conference. It was much the same statement from the previous meeting. The committee said the recovery is proceeding moderately, with the labor market gradually improving, but housing still depressed. The statement said increases in commodity prices are adding to inflation, but it sees inflation as transitory, not likely to turn into an inflation spiral. And the committee said, again, it's likely to keep interest rates exceptionally low for an extended period of time.
The Fed has been buying bonds recently to try to stimulate the economy. It's something called quantitative easing. The Fed has said it's supposed to end in June, a temporary measure. Will it, in fact, end in June?
Well, yes. Bernanke said the Fed will stop when it's bought $600 billion in government bonds and then hold at that level. Now, a lot of economists have criticized the program, saying there's no indication it's helped. And I asked Bernanke about that criticism during the press conference. He defended the program, saying it had helped boost growth and job creation and the stock market. So if that's the case, I asked him, with unemployment at nearly 9%, why not extend the stimulus? He said it's because inflation risks are rising.
It's not clear that we can get substantial improvements in payrolls without some additional inflation risk. And in my view, if we're going to have success in creating a long-run sustainable recovery with lots of job growth, we've got to keep inflation under control.
And as he talks about the long run, that's not great news for millions of Americans who remain unemployed or underemployed.
No, it's not. And the chairman, I think, realized that. And he ended his news conference saying he understands people are suffering from the current combination of high unemployment, high gas prices, and high foreclosure rates. But Bernanke added he believes that ultimately the United States economy can and will return to health and its preeminent place in the global economy.
I got to let you go in just a second, but does the Fed think this is a good idea on the whole? I know this is something he wanted to do.
Yeah, I think so, generally. Actually, this idea came from a subcommittee headed by another Fed governor, Janet Yellen. So I think there's consensus that this is the right way to go.
That's NPR's Janet Stijan. Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
For insight into financial news, we often turn to Wall Street broker Ted Weisberg. He's president of Seaport Securities, and we wanted to get his impression today of what Chairman Bernanke said at that news conference. Ted Weisberg, welcome back to the program.
Well, thank you.
And we all know that one verbal slip from a Fed chairman can send markets into a tizzy. You were watching today. What do you think? How did he do?
Well, I think he did just fine. I don't think there were absolutely any surprises, no curveballs. I think the conference was completely transparent, which I think it was intended to do. But I really don't think anybody expected to hear any answers from the Fed chairman other than what they got, which was basically stay the course and there's no quick fix.
And bravo to you, Ted, for not using the cliche that the market does not like surprises in that answer. We did hear Chairman Bernanke end the news conference today saying he's very confident in the strength and dynamism of the U.S. economy in the long run. Do you agree with that assessment?
Well, I think so. I think, every day we get up and the glass needs to be half full. If it's not half full, then obviously we have other issues. And I think that was clearly the message that he left everybody with. It was, I refer to it as a locker room message, one more for the Gipper kind of thing. but I think it was, I think it needed to be said. You know, the issue, of course, for the economy and for the Fed chairman is one of time. And unfortunately, most of us don't have a lot of patience and we want quick fixes for very real reasons, especially if you're not working and need a job. Obviously, you're going to interpret what was said today a little differently than if you are working and don't need a job. But it's a time issue, and I think he got that message out pretty good, that they're going to stay the course. Things are working ever so slowly, but working in a positive fashion. And he thinks at the end of the day that his policies will, in fact, have very positive results for the U.S. economy.
Yeah, Chairman Bernanke was asked a few different ways about higher gas prices, higher food prices. Did you think he had much to add on that in terms of what the Fed could do about that?
Well, I'm not sure. Those are two great questions, because clearly that's where the rubber meets the road for most of us. It's either at the gas pump or in the grocery store. And though we know that when the Fed looks at core inflation, they conveniently are allowed to leave out energy prices and food prices. And, of course, that's what impacts most Americans on a daily basis. And clearly there is inflation at the gas pump and there is inflation in the grocery store. And unfortunately, I think the current Fed policies are to a certain degree stimulating that those increases in prices. And unfortunately, I guess you just can't have it both ways. And so he did say that he thinks that that what we see at the gas pump will subside going forward. And I assume that also means that the price increases that we've seen in the grocery store will also begin to abate and hopefully go the other way. But of course, that remains to be seen.
Yeah, I noticed he used some nautical terminology talking about inflation. He said if it becomes unmoored, was the word he chose, it would require Fed action. For now, he said inflation expectations are well anchored.
Right, unmoored. Yes, a nautical term, something I know well. set loose, afoot, right? I think I think that was in deference to the issues at the gas pump and in the grocery store, which every American feels on a daily basis in one form or another. And this is clearly going to be a problem for him going forward, because if the commodities and the energy sector don't cooperate for whatever reasons, and a lot of what's driving those prices are not in his control, then clearly they're going to have to shift gears and do something to help rein that in.
Okay, Ted, good to talk to you again. Thanks so much.
My pleasure. Thank you.
That's Ted Weisberg, president of Seaport Securities in New York, talking with us about today's rare news conference with Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke.